independently of something else, which is more important. There is a something else which has to be defined before you know what tyranny is. What's that? It's opposite. Freedom.
Get a friend, get informed, and get involved. We are not Cattle Radio.
That's it. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to We Are Not Cattle Radio. It is the 22nd day of... Oh, I got some leveling problems here. The 22nd day of September 2015, and we're going to be live here for the next hour. Joining me here in a moment will be Josh Wiley of statelesshomesteading.com. And what we are going to discuss tonight should be a very nice change. First of all, let me explain where the We Are Not Cattle show went, as we were not here, as some of you may have noticed. And for those of you that did go back and listen to the archives, share those with people that you know, people you love, people you like, we do appreciate it. So about a month ago, my daughter ended up getting sick on show day. So I took the liberty of being a good dad and tried to help out around and ended up canceling the show last minute. And then shortly after that, I was sick for the next show. And so I couldn't run a show then. And on Wednesday night, the night before the show that would have been 3 weeks or a week and a half ago, my hard drive decided to die. So I really had no functioning computer in order to run the show, have any of my audio clips, nothing. It was all gone. I was able to salvage the hard drive to an extent, was able to put some of the pieces back together, ordered a new hard drive, and lo and behold, we're here. We have finally made it. We have finally returned, and just in time for the CERN experiment tomorrow, which... if they create a black hole, it will be the last of the We Are Not Cattle podcast. So we do appreciate you guys tuning in tonight. Joining me, as I said before, will be Josh Wiley of statelesshomesteading.com, regular guest to the show. And we're going to discuss a couple of things tonight. We're going to discuss the migrant crisis in the Middle East, well, the verbiage that people are using, whether that's good, bad, or indifferent. We're also going to discuss... the escalation between the Americans and the Russians as it pertains to Syria, a topic we've stayed on for almost years now, it seems like. Gosh, I guess it has been years. And then we're going to touch on always our favorite, the cyber, you know, everything cyber. So, oh, I know what's going on here with we got some auto leveling going on here with Skype. So if you guys will give me a moment, I'm so sorry. I just want to fix this because I can see myself. I can see it automatically adjusting my mic, and there we go. That should be much better. So anyway, we were having some... So I'm trying to get all this stuff geared up now. Got the show back on the airwaves, and like I said, we're going to be discussing Syria, the migrant crisis, which go hand in hand, and gosh, it really looks like my audio is real low this evening. I wonder what's going on here. So if anybody can hit me up on Twitter and let me know if you guys are catching this or if I sound funky, I would appreciate it. I'm trying to work with levels on the fly here. So anyway, Josh and I have spent the last, I would say, 3 or 4 days on some interesting information. And maybe it pertains to CERN, maybe it doesn't. Maybe it pertains to what you experience in your day-to-day memory recall, maybe it doesn't. But it's the idea of the Mandela effect, and we're going to get into that here in a little bit. That'll be the second half of the show. But joining me here in a couple moments, as I can get him pulled up here, will be Josh Wiley, and I just sent him the info, so we should be good to go. Yeah, and just sent him a little message. So once he appears in the chat room, we'll go ahead and get him live and up on the air. And so now we're... hold on a second. It says he needs Skype credits. He said he needs Skype credits to call this number. That's odd. Let's see. Let's see if I can pull him up via invite guest co-host. Let's see. Emails would come. All right, let's see if I can get him. So I guess we'll have to get Josh on the phone. Stand by. Sorry, guys. Live broadcast. We'll probably edit all this stuff out. And if you guys are listening live, thank you very much for listening. If you end up sharing the show later, as I've requested before, please wait for a couple of days so I can get the better quality audio uploaded. And so you guys will have a better listening experience. We want to put out a good product here, remembering the fact that we are the champions of the reality frame that we live in, meaning that we are going to try our best to get to the bottom of everything that is going on here, try to use grammar, logic, and rhetoric, make sense of some of the madness, and then point out when the mainstream media, or any media for that instance, is lying to you. And we all have to look at the way that we receive information now very differently than we did even 10, 15 years ago. Because now, even though you have the idea of alternative ways of thinking and alternative views, those kind of get also bogged down with the fact that you can have provocateurs get in there and spread disinfo. So we're dealing with a lot of that as well. We're dealing with a lot of that even from our own media, because the media, as we've been we've talked about many times, is beholden to the corporations, the people that buy their airtime, the people that buy their commercials. That's where they get most of their funding. It's why campaign finance reform will never happen, because when you talk about campaign finance reform, what you're asking for is the people that benefit the most, the media, to do away with one of their largest revenue streams, and it's just not going to happen. The media is not going to get rid of it. The media is not going to cut off their cash cow. And so the idea of campaign finance reform is just, it's unfortunate that it is a myth that will never be realized. We have too many other challenges dealing in the world, rather than figuring out which puppet we're going to choose this year, whether it's going to be Bernie Sanders or whether it's going to be Hillary Clinton, which I'm just really starting to think that she doesn't have a chance. Now there's these allegations coming out that Hillary Clinton's sick. She's well under the weather. And it could be just an excuse or a ploy to get her out of the race. Because even if we all know, or the people that listen to this podcast know, that the presidential reality show is, in fact, that it is just a reality show. It has no bearing on policy. It has no bearing on what happens in our day-to-day lives, because the policy is set by the policymakers. It's not set by the politicians. For the most part, it's set by the lobbyists. It's set by the people that write the bills, the people that drag the bills in, whether they're written by foreign corporations, whether they're written by individuals on some kind of subcommittee. That was a very interesting article I saw down in Florida that was sent to me by my uncle-in-law, that was showing how even in the privatized educational sector that they're starting to do the idea of reward for high test scores. So you can't escape it. It doesn't really matter how it's sliced. We're always going to end up with the same piece of the pie, and that's where we're trying to give you some alternative ideas, some alternative views, but also let you know what's coming down the pike. Because Josh and I have researched this. Gosh, I've been researching it for 7 years. The idea of neo-technocratic fascism, the idea that we're going to be assimilated into this new fascistic, very controlled, managed society, which always sounds great on paper, but always turns out horrifically for the populace. We're going to tell you what's coming. I warned of the tracker boxes and cars 3.5 years ago when I first started this voyage. I heard it on Alex Jones that he was talking about this, and I ended up researching it and looking into it, and sure enough, he was right. You know, that's the crazy thing is that we have to check out the information that we get. And when we find out that we have really good information and it's really damning to what free humanity should expect, that's when we need to turn our we need to turn on our voice and start letting what we believe to be invasive technology. We need to start letting people know about it. Strike up conversations like I do. Strike up conversations in the grocery store. It's amazing how many people, and if you just talk to them, how much people really do know, and how now people are scrambling to find answers for all this craziness that's been going on around them. They have no idea. They don't know why the economy keeps doing what it's doing. It looks like Josh just popped on. They have no idea what the Fed not raising interest rates does. They have no idea what any of this stuff does. But if you listen to this show, you can at least have some working knowledge of what these things do and what these policies mean and how it benefits people in an overarching agenda, and explain that to people in a pretty succinct manner and let them understand that, hey, what you're being told is not what's going on. And that's all they need. And if they can't take it from there, if they can't take the football from the, excuse the sports analogy, if they can't take the football from the 1 yard line and punch it in from there, then you got no hope, guys. But all we have to do is start communicating with each other. This is what we've talked about many times on the show, but I think it's, you know, after this little reset of being away for a month, I think it's something that we do need to dive into again. It's engaging our fellow human beings, not looking at everybody like they're trash, not looking at them like they're individuals and on little teams, and we have to compete with everybody, and everybody needs their rights protected, and screw everybody else. Because when we start looking at the longer term of what we're seeing here in society and how it's unfolding, we're looking at a very controlled, very managed, very authoritarian society where people don't have free speech anymore. That's being curtailed all over Europe. And as we've said on this show many times before, whatever happens in Europe, that's typically coming here. They beta test it over there. They see what the population does. Some of the things like vaccines and stuff, they do it over here because they know that the American people think that there's a pill for everything, and that as long as some guy in a white coat tells me it's going to be okay, then everything's going to be peaches. So joining me now is Josh Wiley of statelesshomesteading.com, and we're going to get into a couple of these audio clips. So, Josh, thanks so much for coming on board this evening. If you can give the people a little background on what's going on with your homestead up there. I got to go turn off some switches over here. I've got my air conditioner running, and I think it's kind of screwing with my audio. So are you there, Mr. Josh?
I am. Well, my goodness, glad that you noticed that. Thanks so much for having me. I'm Josh of StatelessHomesteading.com. I blog under the pseudonym of Rusticus, where I had set out with the original intent of simultaneously documenting this process of creating an off-grid homestead while kind of, synchronizing that to a certain extent with my geopolitical musings.
Mm-hmm.
And thus far, it's been largely about the geopolitical musings, simply because a lot of those articles have become a lot more passed around than I initially thought that they would at this point. So that's taken up a lot of my time, as has just, getting off the grid in general. It's a bit of a daunting task, but hopefully within the next few weeks, people will be able to check out my site and see its more original vision start to be fulfilled a tad bit more, because, as I note, I have been a bit lax in documenting the process of what's going on in the homestead. But again, it's always great to be on, Jake.
Well, thanks for buying me some time, man. I do appreciate it. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to listen to us here. It's been, like I said, it's been a little bit over a month, and the conversations that Josh and I have had in that time period have been very interesting and very entertaining. So, you know, before we get into the Mandela effect, which I do want to spend probably the good latter half of the show on, Josh, let's touch on some things that happened while we were away, you know, while we were on my little hiatus of,
getting a hard drive and installing it and finding Windows, which, you know, I know you're going to wag your finger at me, but, you know, getting all
I'm shaking my head as we speak.
It's such a joke. I mean, it took me 2 days to get a machine up and running because you had to download the updates. You had to load your antivirus, and the antivirus has got to update, and then you got to do more updates because you got to wait for the first service pack to go through. Just a whole bunch of absolute crap that I had to deal with. But we're here, we're live, we're rocking and rolling, and let's hop right to it, Mr. Josh. I do want to cover something that's, I'm going to start recent, and then we're going to kind of work backwards. So this came out today, or at least I saw it appear today, and since I have left Facebook, everybody, I will tell you that, wow, does it do wonders for your sanity when you are not on social media. I don't, it's very odd. It is very odd. I will just say I'm a much, much more cognizant person now, and I feel much more lucid. So anyway, this is what came out today, and this is from Infowars.com, so let's all, you know, let's all take it with a grain of salt. But this is the kind of stuff that we were talking about coming down the pike, even when we talked about cyber, Josh. This is tying everything in with little bows and little ribbons so that you guys can share these podcasts with your friends and have conversations between groups and find out if this is some place you guys really want to go as a society. So it says, FBI merges criminal and civil fingerprint database. Josh, you remember those times where you went to the, or at least we did, I don't know if you guys did this, did you ever go when you were a kid to the hospital or to the police station and do like a little tour and they showed you what it was like to get fingerprinted and locked you up? Did you ever go through that?
Yeah, we did that right before we went to the fake house that the fire department has set up in a lot of towns where they teach you how to escape from a burning building.
Yep.
Do you do that one? Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Remember vividly, just as I remember the Berenstain Bears, Jake. But
the stains. All right, here we go. So it says, for years, the FBI has maintained it had no interest in scanning fingerprints collected by employees, teachers, lawyers, state and federal workers, even bike messengers now routinely submit fingerprints for employment. But that has all now changed. For the first time, fingerprints and biological information will be sent to the FBI for a background check and will be stored and searched right along with fingerprints taken from criminal purposes, reports the Electronic Frontier Foundation, an organization dedicated to protecting rights online. This change, which the FBI revealed quietly in February 2015 Privacy Impact Assessment. I love how they always have little acronyms that are so cute. Privacy Impact Assessment. So I assume they're assessing how much of their privacy they want to invade of ours. Meaning that you will have your fingerprints taken for licensing or background checks. You will most likely end up in the FBI's NGI database. As if we needed to be told any of this stuff. Like this, we knew this stuff was coming. Years ago, tried to tell people that you do not have any rights, you don't have any privacy anymore. The government is not going to tell you what they're doing, but they're creating giant databases and they're creating giant profiles, which was all uncovered by NSA whistleblowers, 10 years ago, Josh? But you know what? Screw it. We don't need to listen to those people. They're loons, you know. This search by thousands of times under law enforcement agencies across the country. Even if your fingerprints don't match any criminal records when they first are submitted to the system. So they just keep it just in case you might be a criminal. Welcome to America, you know, land of the free, home of the guilty. The EFF believes that the change is part of an ongoing movement towards cataloging information on everyone in America. You don't say. And the movement won't end up with, fingerprints. Now that the FBI has added the facial recognition component to its database, the employers of state and local governments will be urged to submit photographs along with fingerprints. Well, I'm going to just stop right there. Josh, doesn't this sound like it's just, I mean, we're going to live on we're going to live in the safest society in the world. Nobody's ever going to commit a crime.
Well, it sounds like 10 years ago is what it sounds like, Jake. I mean, I'm sure that longtime listeners will come as no surprise to But perhaps for newer listeners out there, people should note that state police databases have included all of these civil services, civil sector jobs, as well as pawn shop databases, which are now rapidly upgrading, have been over the past few years, at least in my state of Michigan, since I think I remember seeing the first ones pop up around 2011, 2012,
mm-hmm.
Of a digitized thumb scanner as opposed to an ink print, which is sent to the state capitol for criminal background checks when you know, selling items at pawn shops. And before, even with the old ink system, that was done as a matter of protocol. These things were sent off to Lansing and put in a database. So to think that the FBI does not have, or over the past 10 years has not had, you know, a significant access to state police database records, which do include all of the things that they're now mainlining directly to themselves, would be a little bit naive in that respect. It's also funny that this news comes to us through the EFF, given their history of, exploring some of these topics, but at the same time promoting either faulty technologies or leading your attention away from various aspects. You noted earlier NSA whistleblowers. Of course, EFF is a big proponent of Edward Snowden and Julian Assange, two characters that, at least personally, I have a lot of questions about. The EFF has also been heavily involved in the promotion of Tor, as well as the Tails operating system that is essentially a live disk style operating system designed to leave no trace of its running. But of course, you know, the Defense Department involvement with Tor, as well as academia. And now, Jake, we're finding recently that there's some fairly sizable dark markets that, because of exploits in Tor, that essentially deem these anonymizing features and some of the IP obfuscation that they're doing there almost moot. They've pulled these sites offline, at least for the past few months. So this is just a little bit of background on the EFF. But of course, you know, in terms of the larger scale of these operations and the steady Fabian decline of liberty based around these snitch society technologies, certainly the FBI admitting this whole hog is not a positive development, even if it is technology that quite frankly, they've had for quite some time.
Well, and it's kind of par for the course, right? And I mean, any time that they tell you about what's going on, they've already been doing it. It's kind of the... I don't know if that's the way that they just operate, and they have operated for a while, is they'll deny that all this stuff is going on, just like NSA spying or all that stuff. It was all deny. And then it's like when they're ready for the public to find out, they just say, okay, yeah, we're doing it. But, you know, we're going to catch some terrorists. And so all is supposed to be forgiven. So moving on and sticking with the idea of, man, well, you know what? We're turning into like the cyber show. Have you noticed that we cover a lot of just snooping technology? And I guess because it really irks me, I guess.
Yeah.
Because it really pisses me off that I just want to live in a free society where I'm not innocent, or I'm innocent until proven guilty and not guilty until proven innocent, which is what all this technology is. It's assuming guilt, and it's also, for all my lawyer friends out there, it's also assuming jurisdiction, which they don't have in any of these cases. But you know what?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're concerned at all about human autonomy, then you have to be concerned about these technologies. You know, for people who are interested in exploring the history of that topic further, I'd recommend a documentary called The Net. It's a European documentary. I want to say Dutch TV aired it, but it explores, you know, the history of the internet and its use as kind of a panopticon-esque technology. And this was done in the early 2000s. Very interesting watch. But just barring our personal interest in, you know, being free people, you know, it shouldn't come as a surprise necessarily that we're both, you know, really interested in these developments specifically, not just because we're both kind of nerdy about these kind of things, but you, in a certain sense, work in that field. And as I categorize and blog over at statehosthomesteading.com, a lot of my niches seem to fall under the umbrella of Agenda 21,
mm-hmm.
Which you know, you can't talk about Agenda 21 without discussing these snitch society technologies that are really going to underpin this new system of economics, of order, of politics, of life in general.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, even though there are more people talking about it on a regular basis, you always need more.
No, I would agree with that 100%, because if we can reach a tipping point where we can get the masses to not care about, shout my abortion and crazy, insane stuff like that, and get them to pay attention to, hey, we might have real tyrants on our hands, and if we don't have real tyrants on our hands, if one gets in, this is over for humanity. It really is.
I completely agree, Jake, but it's like I told you the other night, and this is a little bit tangentially related, not directly to the topic necessarily of snitch society technologies, but I'm back downstate for a couple days, and my dad was sitting around watching Monday Night Football, the Colts versus somebody or other, I don't know, but during the singing of the national anthem, I noticed that the people on the field who were rolling out this flag and waving it, this giant, gaudy-ass American flag, these people all had on the same jersey. And at first I thought it said Freeman, and I was like, yeah, Freeman, are they honoring some player? And as I got closer to the television screen, it clearly said Freemason, with that nice little compass and the big old G in between the horseshoe there on the Colts logo. And as the camera panned around, it was abundantly clear that these were not actual Freemasons, because I'd say about half of them were women. And Freemasonry, of course, is a male fraternal organization, so no ladies around, you know? It's like your old treehouse. And as I pointed out to my dad, it was just something that he wouldn't necessarily have noticed. But because it was pointed out, he did. So it's about snapping people out of the malaise of things like football, to even get people to comprehend the topic, that your psyche, whether it's from your cell phone or your Facebook connection or even your viewing of Monday Night Football, your psyche is being bombarded on an almost constant barrage of propaganda designed specifically to get you to limit your human autonomy. I constantly, I know as you do, Jake, struggle with the best way necessarily to do that when you have distractions as enthralling as football, you know, something that will allow you to live out your dream as a child forever, as sports players do. They, you know, they are the Peter Pans of our age. They never have to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
Now we live in a society where these same phones that are snitching on us and you know, scanning fingerprints, presumably that will soon be added to FBI databases.
Oh, come on. That's a conspiracy theory.
I wonder why they're putting the fingerprint scanners on all these phones, but maybe it's just for Apple Pay and it's really trendy, Jake. But, these same technologies are now allowing you to play something like fantasy football, where you can essentially satiate your desire to be a general manager.
Yep.
But essentially, again, fantasy football, living out your fantasies vicariously through someone else. And I, like Adams and Jefferson, often question whether or not we have a society that's even capable of getting back on track at this point. But
yeah, well, I mean, and they were...
Sorry
they
to
were,
digress.
No, it's okay. And they were highly... I mean, that was the intellectual revolution of the time, and those people were, I mean, what did they have, like a over 90% literacy rate, and we're at like 70, I think? I can't even remember where.
That.
Yeah, well, anyway, all right, so more about the snitch society. Josh, let's talk about your people over at Allstate, and then we'll bounce over into the Middle East real quick, and then we'll finish up with the Mandela effect stuff, which is basically taking my mind, put it in a blender, and curate it, poured it back in, and then solidified it into one giant brick of I have no idea what the hell is going on. But I do have some answers for you on the Fruit Loops and other things, so we'll get into that in a minute. But here is Allstate with their new technology they're trying to patent to monitor you for your safety, because you guys all can't be trusted to drive cars.
What would these more on what these patents would allow Allstate to do?
Well, what's so interesting about these patents, it's really just a few things. First of all, they got one in June that envisions selling this driving data to other companies like banks, marketers, health insurance companies. They think this data could be useful for other companies, so that's one element of it. A second element of it, they're not just interested in how you drive. Now they're talking about
how fast you go,
how fast, whether you brake a lot, what time of day you drive, your mileage. That's typically the kinds of things they've been interested in. Now they're also talking about gathering physiological data, like having sensors on steering wheels that could tell things about your heart rate. And lastly, the third really interesting part that they just got a patent for, it would be watching other drivers, as well as stuff not related to driving in the car, like how many passengers are there? Are there kids? Are you eating? Are you talking on the phone? And how are people around you driving? Are there pedestrians?
Yeah, there you go. So I'm going to play all three of these clips, and then we'll break these guys down. So sorry, I had my sound effect turned up a little bit there. So that was clip number one. Moving on to clip numero dos and Allstate and their much love for humanity as they track and trace you into oblivion and sell your data away. And, you know, they got to make sure that nobody's horsing around in the car. They might have to mail you a ticket or something or turn you into the cops so they can mail you a ticket.
Companies gather this data. There's a couple of good reasons. They want to be able to offer a competitive product.
It's always about competitive product, isn't it, Josh? It's always about, you know, it's just going to make it cheaper for you, right? Like Obamacare.
And one of the things they can do is anything they can find out that would help get you the right price, so actuarially base the risk, so that you're not paying for the risk of somebody else and how they drive.
Which is actually total nonsense, because I was in three car wrecks in my entire life within about 6 months. None of which were my fault. I totaled two cars, and I almost couldn't get insurance from anyone because I was uninsurable because I was a high-risk driver, even though I had never gotten a ticket, and none of the accidents were my fault. So this is all PR bullshit, everyone. Excuse my language.
Is good information. Anything that would improve the safety, because if you've got three or four kids in the car, perhaps they're creating a distraction, and that may be something that causes you to take your eyes off the focus of the driving
process.
I'm
sure that's never happened to a parent.
Not, of course not. Not any of us. Anyway, so there are reasons to do that, and then what you try and do is figure out, are there behaviors that you can change by collecting some of this data? What we've learned over the years is some of the data that's been collected from people as they drive and when they drive and how fast they drive, it's actually been used to improve the driver's safety. People have actually changed their driving habits because they get discounts if they actually drive better and safer. And then it's also a thing with the car manufacturers as they try and put more and more of this crash avoidance technology in their vehicles.
Oh, a.k.a. meaning that they're going to put, what, Josh? What are they going to put on the road instead of human driving cars?
I don't know. There are a few companies that are working on autonomous systems, Jake. Google was one of those. Maybe GM is working on that with the ENV 2.0 that they're demonstrating all throughout China this year. I don't know, though. And that sounds like a conspiracy theory to me.
It does. I mean, what they're going to do with this data, and you can kind of see the setup, everyone. If you can follow the bouncing ball of logic, which we does, I mean, we air it up every once in a while on the show, and we'll bounce it back and forth. But if you do follow the bouncing ball of logic, what's going to happen is that they're going to gather all this data for about 5 years, somewhere around 2020, maybe 2030. They're going to roll out all these cars and say, you know what? We've determined that humans are uninsurable because they are just too dangerous to be on the road. So there you go. That's how you're going to that's how they're going to phase this out. Once again, they've figured out how to do willful acceptance of invasive technology, and they're just going to have PR firms tell you how great it is and never tell you about what it's used for, what the nefarious use is or use could be, and you're going to get enslaved, and it's going to be fun. It's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. Well, go ahead, man.
correct me if I'm wrong on these 2 points. One, I think, is it Oregon that's already essentially kind of rolling out a tax by the mile system that is using GPS location and sensors that are now are about to be mandatory that you have to plug into your dash. And,
they actually the black boxes have been mandatory through the manufacturers since I believe 2010, but that might be too late. I think it might have been 2008 even. So So the black tracker boxes have been mandatory from a manufacturer standpoint for I believe at the least the last 5 years.
Well, I'm talking about specifically an add-on that goes into your 12-volt outlet, very similar to what Progressive offers now.
Right.
That is, the safe driving bullshit. That is at least currently that's on a voluntary basis.
Mm-hmm.
But
all the tracker boxes do exactly what those
exactly,
appliances
yeah.
do, but. It gives you, once again, it gives you the option to opt in to the Panopticon so you don't feel like it's being forced on you. They're very smart in how they deploy all this technology. I'll have to give them that. They war game this stuff out very well, and then they get some PR smart guy like me, like, how can we get people to do it? Like, well, give them discounts on their insurance and tell them they're going to save money and tell the parents it's going to save lives and tell the moms it's going to save kids' lives, and that's all you got to do, you know. Show a kid getting a car wreck, and you got 90% of the female mothers out there.
Well, Jake, the Cash for Clunkers program kind of go in line with these steps as you're talking about the nature of how a transition from a human based driving society to an automated driving society would work? Wasn't it 2006? 2005 that the model years existed where you could essentially turn in these cars and have them scrapped for a discount on a new automobile to kick off the subprime auto lending bubble in the first Obama administration.
That's very very true and a very perceptive catch there. I mean that was well done.
Yeah, I was just going to say that those model years happened to correspond exactly with the years in which it became mandatory for these black box technologies to include GPS. I think it was General Motors, all of their cars, whether or not they included OnStar, have included these boxes since 1995. But all other auto manufacturers, at least by U.S. law, were not required to include them until 2005, 2006 model year, which, again, corresponds directly with this Cash for Clunkers program. So it wouldn't be too surprising to see, some similar analog, 10 to 15 years from now when these people just make the decision, well, 70% of the cars on the road are already driving themselves. Let's heavily subsidize people trading in these old steering wheel models because we don't want people doing something so dangerous as driving their car where we don't want them to.
Yep. It's amazing. You know, guns kill, less than, 10,000 people in America a year, and in Georgia alone, we've already had 1,000 fatalities. So, on the roadways, believe me, I get the little flashing telescreen when I'm driving to work on Monday morning. I get that update. Be careful! Over 1,000 people have died on Georgia roadways this year. But remember, we got to take away your guns and your ability to protect yourself because they're scary. All right, last clip, and then we're gonna hop over to the Middle East, and then. Then we'll get into what's been bogging us down for the last couple of days. So, wrapping it up with Allstate, you're in good hands, Josh.
Didn't the Allstate CEO say something about or suggest or imply that selling this data might be a possibility?
Oh, yeah. They said that a few months ago. He was at a conference, and he says it's sort of the same thing that Google does. So he floated the...
Yeah, and for those of you playing the home game, Google is not a search engine. That is a advertising company financed by NQTEL, CIA front group. Gotta love it.
This a few months ago where he said, we might envision selling this driving data someday.
Ooh.
And then in June, they had received this patent that sort of lays out the potential of selling this driving data to different industries.
Such as...
I love how they say sort of lays out the potential. What is that? Can you use any more shady terms, lady?
such as health insurance companies, banks, marketing companies. Their reasoning is, well, maybe if somebody's an aggressive driver, they're going to be aggressive about how they handle their money.
Or they could just have to take a poop and they're trying to get home. So whatever. You know, all of this data is it's all nice pie in the sky crap to think that, you know, every situation is the same and everybody's emotions are always the same and nothing ever happens. I mean, good gosh, you could have somebody get in the car that just heard that her husband had a heart attack and she's racing to the hospital and all of a sudden her insurance premium goes up because she's driving dangerously. I mean, this is just, it's setting up for disaster. So I'm not going to play the Michigan okay to say, Josh. So final thoughts on this Allstate and self-driving cars phenomenon that we're going to experience. Once again, all things cyber in the first segment.
Well, just this is your future, people, and it's I'm sure that people listening to this show are already cognizant of these facts. But if for those who aren't, or for those who have family and friends that aren't, please start to inform them, because we're increasingly entering a society where not only are these things voluntary or pseudo-voluntary, like a Facebook account or you know, your use of a cell phone everywhere you go, we're going to enter a society where the less voluntary aspects start to come into play. And certainly things like insurance premiums and taxation, regulation of social management through big data, these are some of the more integral components. What's coming in Paris with the Conference of the Parties, the 21st Conference of the Parties, to ratify the United Nations global climate change emission standards is going to play a big part in this, as a lot of these tracking softwares are going to be involved in that specific realm. As you're seeing right now with companies like Volkswagen, who, are trying to kind of skirt that little that aspect of the Panopticon. And when it was found, of course, that these sensors were misreporting some of the emissions data, it's now becoming a big problem for them, solely because they want this technology operating spick and span when they need to jack up your either your health insurance premium or, for example, the amount that you pay for heating or electrical bills because you use too much during peak hours and you need to be monitored or rationed. And I've been writing about this extensively over at statelesshomesteading.com, specifically as it pertains to Agenda 21. But if people want to get a better idea of how these technologies are working on a cohesive basis, I'd recommend one of the more popular articles on that site being China 21, Anglo-American Sustainability in Asia is the title of that one. And I think it's a good one to maybe send to friends and family because, one, it doesn't deal with America directly, although it does in a tangential sense. It's more about Asia and Asian smart cities and Asian panopticonic technologies. But it's also very well-sourced and well-documented, so it's not exactly something that's easy to refute.
Yeah, and I'll put that link in the show notes for show 116, everybody, and you can go to the website, wearenotcattle.net, and you'll be able to find it there. I'm actually going to do some upgrades to the We Are Not Cattle this weekend, so stay on board for that. So let's shift our focus to, I don't even think we should cover the migrant crisis at this point, because the mainstream media is actually doing a decent job of covering it, but what they're not covering is the a couple of tidbits that I took away. Not all of these people are from Syria. A lot of them are economic refugees. And so, so people pointing to Europe saying that you need to accept these people and then bring them in. We do need to find some way as free humanity to find ways to assimilate these people into society and get them to a place where you should be sustained, at least have some sort of living standard. But if you really want to get mad at somebody, don't get mad at Syria, don't get mad at the U.S., you can point your finger at the IMF and the World Bank and all these economic terrorists that go in there and gut countries, sign them on to bad debt, and then screw them and privatize everything, and then 10 years later go, oh, you know what? you guys didn't pay up and you didn't privatize, so we're gonna put you in more debt. And so if you really want to point some fingers, guys, that's where I would point it, because if it wasn't for the banking cartel, we wouldn't have the migrant situation that we have now. If it wasn't for Western greed and the euro wanting to have those gas pipelines from Syria, then none of this would be going on. So it's all kind of yeah, go ahead, man.
Sorry, I got to jump in on that point, because there are at least competing pipeline models in that area.
Sure.
And it's interesting that the Russians have now showed up in Syria. Certainly the Anglo-Felic banking cartel and this pipeline war is a huge part of this. But I just don't want our viewers to come away with a black and white sense of, oh, well, America created this group of boogeymen called ISIS, and now these people are running, or even that, you know, oh, well, you know, some of these Middle Eastern countries have gotten themselves in a bad debt situation mm-hmm. with the IMF, quite deliberately so, engineered by Western banking institutions, and right. now there's horrible strife and suffering. Because, you know, there are, I guess, a few actors on this world stage as we see it right now, and it's a complicated and nuanced situation that almost deserves a show in and of itself.
Right. And to just put it passively like that, I would be remiss to not mention some of the larger geopolitical ramifications of what is going on over there. But it is not as cut and dry as the mainstream media will let it seem. It is definitely they are definitely not talking about the financial angles that we'll talk about here and that we'll discuss here. And maybe we should do a show on that, Josh, to kind of give everybody some boiling up points, you know, boiling up to this this challenge that we have, this humanitarian crisis, because it is a humanitarian crisis. You have people displaced because they basically just got hosed. They got hosed by their leadership. They got hosed by rich and greedy people coming in and trying to want to do business deals. And then you've got power politics as a big giant overlay. And at the end of the day, those people don't really give a crap about the what did they call them in that EU document that we discussed on air? What were they called? The lemmings? What did they call them?
I don't recall, actually.
Oh, man, but I'll have to... Now it's going to bother me. All right, so...
In the Morris Strong...
Yes, yes.
Or not Morris Strong. Yeah, Lilliputians.
Lilliputians.
Gulliver's Travels, the little people.
Yeah, there we go. Okay. So, yeah, as Josh was saying, it's not nearly as cut and dry, but I just wanted to point out some of the larger angles that we can explore and that need to be brought up if you talk to people about... the migrant situation, it's horrible, it's terrible. The concentration camps all over Europe are terrible and not reported on, widely not reported on. So those are other areas and talking points that you can research for yourself and bring up in conversations when people bring up mainstream media talking points. So anyway, last little transition here. I thought that this was a fabulous question by a Russian reporter to Admiral Kirby, and this is local here in the United States, and then I'm going to go to an Al-Qaeda clip, and then it looks like we're going to do some overtime, so I kind of figured that was coming. But anyway, if you guys want to check out the show live, you can call us here, 602-753-1916, and we'll put you on hold, or you can listen to the downloaded version once we go off air here in about, I think in about 14 minutes, but here's Admiral Kirby with the best question I've heard a reporter ask in quite some time, and wow, what a response.
He is the reason that ISIL has been allowed, and not just ISIL, but other extremist groups have been allowed to fester and grow and sustain themselves inside Syria.
The assertion that you are making that...
He's talking about Assad, by the way. So, sorry, should have set that up. This is all talking about how Assad is the big boogeyman. Remember, we talked about this 3 years ago. The U.S. wanted Assad out. That's why they faked the chemical weapons attack. That's why there's been all this negative publicity on Russia, because Russia is backing Assad. They're longtime allies. So here we go. And here's the beautiful, beautiful question by the Russian.
he's the reason for ISIL is also disputed. Many people in my part of the world believe that the reason for the ISIL existence is the policy of regime change that is pursued by the U.S. and the American allies. What is your response to that?
I'm not going to dignify that with an answer.
Oh, yeah, man. So,
hey, what you reading for?
Oh God, that was beautiful. I love that, Josh. Your takeaway: the Russian reporter asking him, "Hey, isn't this? We believe that this is through a failed American policy of regime change. What do you have to say to that?" I'm not going to dignify that with a response. Next question, Josh. Your thoughts?
Well, it's certainly interesting that the guy ever got in there into the press corps to ask this question of this general at all in the first place. Definitely accurate in terms of what we talk about on this show all the time, Jake. The fact that there is really no fundamental difference between Syrian moderate rebels and the group calling themselves still the Mujahideen, but for some reason in the West is ISIS or IS or ISIL or whatever the hell they want to call it next week. Also interesting in the more grand scheme of things, in that, you know, this is it the Turkstream pipeline or is that the Western version? I know there are competing pipelines right now, one that's supposed to be running from Israel and another from, now I'm forgetting. But one is a Russian project and the other is more of a Western project. So it is interesting that the Gremlins, known as ISIS, have also kind of opened an opportunity for Russia to be drawn into this conflict, either to secure some of those pipeline deals or perhaps maybe to get a foot back into the international drug trade, which they lost in the 80s. Mm-hmm. All very interesting stuff. Very, very interesting. The Russians are incredibly good at counter-propaganda in these terms. I'm sorry that this is being laid on me right now, because my perception of these things really is starting to change now that I've gotten into Sibel Edmonds' work on Gladio B in a more substantive light. But
yeah, and that'll be part of our, that'll
seems to be the case though.
Well, maybe we should do a special like 30-minute podcast segment on that. You know, maybe next show or the show after, we'll get our notes together.
Yeah, I just think it's almost impossible to talk about the Middle East, especially as it pertains to Russia, or at least radical Islam, supposedly,
right,
quote unquote radical Islam, as it pertains to Russia, without talking about Gladio B first. I mean, because I think, Jake, we even in the alternative media, both you and I have also fallen prey, you know, to viewing the world in a unipolar sense. And one of the things that we notice, or I notice at least in documenting Agenda 21, is this shift towards a multipolar world order. So even though they're, you know, these actors are all kind of playing for the same team, they do have, to a certain extent, different interests. Mm. And Gladio B is one of those shadow operations of the shadow government that really make you scratch your head in a big way, especially as it pertains to Russia. So I don't know. We'll have to talk about it some other time. Sorry.
All right. No, that's fine. I mean, I think the audience would appreciate us putting a very succinct podcast together. As far as, you know, we can even start from the creation of the Mujahideen under Brzezinski and Jimmy Carter, and then show the progression of that group, show the progression of Afghanistan and that region, and then how the idea of regime change was pushed by the neocons, and then, you know, turn into policy, which has been an ongoing foreign policy for the better part of the last four presidents. So once again, that's why we say that it doesn't really matter who gets in there. The policies don't change, so it doesn't matter who the figurehead is, the policies will not change. So here is the, I got one more clip, man, and I think we're running out of time here. What do we got? We got 5 minutes. I can get this one clip in before we get out of here. This is a 2-minute clip, so it's a little bit long, but it's talking about the history of Al-Qaeda, and if anybody wants any, what would be some backfill for what this gentleman is saying, you need to check out the Adam Curtis documentary on Al Qaeda, and it's very fascinating. Adam Curtis, BBC documentary filmmaker, does a lot of great documentaries. Did one that was fantastic on the Bolsheviks and the Soviet Union. Very fascinating stuff there. So I'll put the links to all those documentaries in the show notes. Josh, you got one other thing to say?
I just wanted to say that that's a three-parter called The Power of Nightmares. Very interesting. But I just wanted to warn listeners, again, you have a very smart listening audience, Jake, so I'm sure it goes without saying. Mm-hmm. But Curtis is one of these kind of very – he makes fascinating documentaries. He's a very talented filmmaker. But in the same documentary, for example, The Power of Nightmares that we're talking about, where Curtis will demonstrate the evolution of radical Islam throughout Egypt and the school of Said Qutb, and parallels that with the rise of prominence of Leo Strauss at the University of Chicago and this neocon ideology, and how one kind of fed off the other. In this documentary, he essentially presents a very sound thesis that Al-Qaeda as an organization never has actually existed, but at the same time goes on in the second part to conclude that this group that in the first part he says never existed did indeed pull off September the 11th as it went down in lockstep with the official story. So just be careful when you watch Adam Curtis's stuff, because he throws in quite a few mind viruses, and I think that might be his purpose as a filmmaker.
Well, you know, you and I have talked about this before. What makes a great disinformation agent is that you give, you know, 80% truth, and then you have a bunch of BS on top of that, like Veterans Today, the senior editor. I can't remember the dude's name at the time.
Oh, Gordon Duff.
Yeah, Gordy Muff.
exactly.
So, so he even admitted that in order for them to stay alive, that they have to write propaganda. So keep that in mind when you listen to any alternative media. That they could be putting in a little bit of propaganda, so it's always good to do your due diligence, double check, and then once again gather all the facts for yourself and then formulate your own opinion, because in essence what it's all about. And as long as we can keep sharing ideas, we might be able to really figure out what's going on here. Go ahead, man.
Exactly. I was just going to say, and including us, because not that either Jake or myself would ever. Never would we try to overly propagandize our listeners or feed them false information, but we do exist in this mainstream and alternative nexus in which, you know, false information and propaganda comes out all the time. And, you know, while we do our best to cross-reference this stuff and get to the bottom of it based on, you know, primary sources, documentation, forensic history, we screw up sometimes. Yep. So, you know, it's good that we have a network
90
to
seconds.
Constantly be cross-checking. And we also have to just be careful not to fall into that groupthink, because it's in that stew where these mind virus memes, the 20% of that disinformation, really can get a foothold even in a field like ours.
No, I would 100% agree. So for those of you listening live, you're not going to be able to catch the end of this clip. Remember, check out the website, wearenotcattle.com. .net. You can find it there, or you can find it through Blog Talk. I should have it streamed. This show streamed again on jrevradio.com on Thursday night at 9:30. So stay tuned for that. I'll tweet out when it's going to go live, so you guys can listen to the digitally remastered version on JRev Radio. And here we go with the last little clip, and then we're going to talk a little bit about the Mandela Effect. Man, that has blown my mind. Sorry. With CERN coming up, it was just a cosmic collision of information in my brain that I was just not ready for. So here we go. Former Afghani, prime minister, talks about his understanding of Al-Qaeda. So here we go.
Obviously, Al-Qaeda was the main reason that the Americans said they were going into Afghanistan with the Taliban.
Seconds.
Are you still of the view that Al-Qaeda is more of a myth than a reality, is what you said last year? You also said you weren't even sure that they existed. Really?
Exactly, that's my view today as well.
That Al-Qaeda is a myth?
It is, for me, a myth. I have never had a...
Josh, I'd never really paid attention to who this was. This is Hamad Karzai, who's been on Alex Jones's show since, since 2008.
Yeah, it's interesting that the BBC decides to drum him up during their discussion of is it the nonviolent extremists bill that's being passed?
Yeah. Yeah, the one that's basically going to curtail free speech. So anything that's against Karzai's words could
be viewed in that light.
Oh, sure.
The next few months.
Well, because it says anything that is against British, not tradition. That's not the word. What is it?
Fundamental British values.
Fundamental British values. We're in a lot of trouble, people. We've got some really nasty authoritarian douchebags running the place, and if we don't get our heads screwed on
straight. If you're in Europe, you're already fucked and you love it, so.
So there you go. Yeah, free college for everybody.
Report from any Afghan source on the Al-Qaeda or what they were doing. We don't see them. We cannot visualize them. For us, they don't exist. I've never had a report from our intelligence. I've never had a report from our people. I've never come across them.
Did they exist in September the 11th? On September the 11th, 2001, was Al-Qaeda operating in Afghanistan?
I have come across the Taliban. I've come across other groups. I've come across the people called, calling themselves different names.
Who he almost said the Mujahideen, but he caught himself.
Different outfits of extremists and terrorists. We have reports about them. I don't know if Al-Qaeda existed, and I don't know if they exist. For me, it's a myth. I have to feel tangible about it before I can say they are there. Well, reports say they are there, but I have no information.
Your allies in the U.S. government, NATO forces on the ground in Afghanistan all said that they were there fighting Al-Qaeda fighters. When you say it's a myth, you've not seen any evidence, did they call you a conspiracy theorist?
Hey, Josh, didn't NATO forces and American forces say that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and it was confirmed?
I believe that they did, Jake. I think that Colin Powell got up and, flashed, waved that yellow cake uranium around for a couple hours in front of the UN and lied through his fucking teeth. But maybe I just misremembering that one too, Jake.
Yeah, maybe that's the Mandela effect.
I might say you sound like a conspiracy theorist.
Well, if...
good CIA term there. Beautiful.
Saying that something does not exist does not mean a conspiracy.
He actually corrects him on the grammar. That's awesome. He goes, because if it was a conspiracy, then it would actually have to exist. But saying that it doesn't exist is not a conspiracy, because the grammar of conspiracy, meaning a secret group conspiring against or doing things in the shadows. So, oh man, that was beautiful. I didn't even catch that before.
My judgment, it's my feeling. Maybe they are there, but I have not seen them and I have not had a report about them. Any report that would indicate that Al-Qaeda is operating in Afghanistan. And I've also been in conversation with various American officials. The last one that I had was last year, in which they told me that they're perhaps not even more than 30 to 35 individuals. So if that's the entire strength of an organization, for me, that's a myth.
35 people, Josh, in Al-Qaeda.
Yep. Well, I hate to bring up Adam Curtis twice in one conversation, but his latest documentary, Bitter Lake, which is, again, a documentary that you have to watch out for, because he also claims that the spike in opium production that took place in northern Afghanistan in the 60s was just a happy accident as a result of the IMF loans that went in there, which is patently absurd. But it does an excellent job of documenting what American and SAS forces experienced going into Afghanistan into a very nuanced and complex tribal political situation in which there are multiple regional powers, multiple even subtle religious affiliations or even dialects of language that are all competing for one another. It's this, you know, it was already a struggle for power before America got there and the West got there. So what essentially ended up happening is, you know, some of these groups would use American and British forces by essentially just saying that oh, well, yeah, that guy over there who I've had a long-running land dispute with, yeah, he's Al-Qaeda. Go shoot up his group. And then, of course, these people naturally shoot back and their allies shoot back. And, well, if they're shooting back, then they must be Al-Qaeda or they must be Taliban, right, Jake?
Yeah.
And it, of course, it turns out that by the time they're, you know, these troops are now starting to pull out, they are realizing that, well, we don't really know who we were fighting over there. And it was all these disparate kind of tribal affiliated groups. And really, we just kind of made a bad situation much worse. But again, Bitter Lake is the name of that documentary. Very interesting watch.
Once again, I'll link that in the show notes too. Do you want to cover the Mandela effect on this show, or do you want to wait until the next show and do a whole show on it? Because we've kind of recently stumbled across this. Or do you? Let's do it. Let's do a teaser for everybody. Let's do a tease.
Okay. Honestly, I'd like to at least introduce it, Jake, because if we are planning on potentially doing a bigger show with a larger roundtable, maybe even later this week, in which we will talk about it more.
Yeah.
It would be nice for at least our audience to know about it. And I'm also really interested in the feedback you'll get if, you know, whether or not the consensus is as we have remembered these things, mm-hmm. or if some of your listeners remember these new spellings.
Okay, so I'm going to let you lay the groundwork because you're the one that brought it to my attention. And, it's the people's show. So it's your show. It's everybody's show. It's not my show. So it's everybody's show. It's our show. It's your show. It's the audience's show. It's everybody's show. So Josh approached me, 3 days ago? 2 days ago?
Maybe a little bit longer than that, but I think the first time I called you, maybe I either didn't explain this effect very well to you, mm-hmm. or maybe it just hadn't had enough time to stew on it. But really, over the past 2 days, we've been really exploring it.
So it really kind of it flashed by me briefly, and I didn't really dive into it. And I think that everybody in our community, Josh, and in the truth community, has that one go-to friend that you can call up. No matter what you stumbled across or what you saw, what you heard, and just say, okay, I know you're not going to think I'm nuts, so here's what I've heard, here's what I've researched, and here's what I've found, and then you can strike up a conversation from there. So luckily, I am that to Josh, and Josh is that for me. So he contacted me a couple of days ago, mentioned this thing called the Mandela Effect. I think, cooking dinner at the time, so I was, you know, a little bit preoccupied. And he said, well, do you remember about Nelson Mandela? And do you remember about him getting arrested? Do you remember about him dying in jail? And I said, you know, I do remember something about that when I was in middle school or elementary school or something. Well, it was part of my childhood. So it went from that, you know, kind of very passive to I've been looking at some things. And I found out some interesting information. So why don't you take it from there, Josh, and explain to the folks what you uncovered, what happened when you started exploring the information that you saw, and then the subsequent conversations you and I had. We'll save for the next show.
Well, the Mandela effect is in reference to what you just described. It's a group of people, you know, in the hundreds of thousands that for some reason have vivid memories of Nelson Mandela dying in prison right before he was released. And of course, Nelson Mandela actually died earlier. Was it this year or last year?
I think it was last year. Last year.
Yeah. Yeah. But he passed very recently, at least as it stands now. But this group of people still have these very vivid memories, and they're almost all identical in their description of the news coverage that they remember. And, you know, as I was not alive in the late 80s, you know, my birth came very shortly after. I wasn't around to experience that time period. But I do remember hearing in elementary school about Nelson Mandela being dead, as well as a number of other historical discrepancies that we're kind of now discovering. But I think the best way to you know, describe the Mandela effect to someone is to demonstrate it, Jake. And I don't know if you've got those clips that I sent you queued up, but I think that they're really good ones in that they both reference pop culture memes that hopefully people remember the way that we do, or else maybe we really are insane.
That's still a possibility. According to the central government, I'm sure that we are. Which one do you want to go with first?
Let's start with the Bears.
Okay.
Jake.
Okay. So what we're talking about here, guys, is the from what I remember, and this is me as a little kid, there was this group of bears called the Berenstain Bears that had a cartoon show. They had a bunch of books. And TrueStream Media, which I'll link to in the show notes, did a fabulous job of documenting a lot of these things. And what we found is that now everywhere it's Berenstain. So instead of it being Berenstein, like Stein or Stein, which is what I always used to question. I was like, is it, do you pronounce it Stein or is it Stein? And then, and now it's Stain everywhere you go. So either this is all of us misremembering things from our childhood, but there's a lot of different things that happen after Josh and I had this conversation regarding the Bears that did push us down another road. So I'm going to play a clip from the Berenstain Bears, and this still just doesn't seem right to me. But anyway, here we go.
This way to Bear Country. You'll know when you're there. As soon as you enter, you'll feel like a bear. A great grizzly bear. A Berenstain Bear. We are the Berenstain Bears.
Mama.
Sister.
Brother.
We appreciate each other.
Okay. So, Josh, what do you remember that cartoon show being?
Well, there are two of those cartoon shows. That one's from the 80s, and then there was another one in the 90s. Both were on PBS. And, of course, the Berenstain Bears, at least as I remember them, were some of the books that I learned to read on, as did a lot of kids coming up in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. I also remember watching that cartoon show. It was on right after Arthur the Aardvark, right before I went to school every morning. And it would be one thing if I were to misremember or accept a common mispronunciation of that term, if I were only having it read to me. But I think I would have noticed it being pronounced differently every time that I watched those episodes, and I would have corrected myself. But it would seem that the spelling of Stein versus Stain, originally there was a little bit of a discrepancy because some people insisted that the spelling had changed because the authors wanted to obfuscate the Jewish nature of their name for some reason. But you start to look at the artifacts, old vintage, Berenstain, Stain, Bears, memorabilia from the 60s and 70s, including the books. It seems that it's always been Stain. At least where we are now, it has always been Stain. And if readers remember the Berenstain Bears and still have an old copy of any of their books, go up into your attic or your mom's basement, wherever those things are stored, pull one out, and I can all but guarantee you it will say Berenstain. In case people didn't hear that one, I've got a clip of a version of that where it's slowed down. But that one's pretty clear. And this is an example of what's called the Mandela effect. Someone having vivid memories of something, a small thing, being different than as it has seemingly actually happened. I think another one of those, a more jarring example of this, Jake, is that Mr. Rogers.
Oh, this is where you got me. This is where I was, on board. So, for those of you know, or for those of you that grew up watching Mr. Rogers, it's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Nope. It is actually not a beautiful day in the neighborhood. It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, which I never remember that. Now, once again, this could be misremembering from 20 years ago, but I talked to 6 people all in my age bracket, and everybody was certain It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood was the way that the theme song went. So these clips, where did you pull these clips from, Josh?
These two I pulled directly from YouTube, but I know that your neighbor actually went directly to Netflix.
Yep.
And experienced the same thing that this clip demonstrates.
So here we go, everybody. And if you think that It's a Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, we're all wrong, evidently, or we're from a different multiverse. And that is a whole different ball of wax. Here we go, everyone. Enjoy. Buckle your britches. And for those of you who grew up in the 80s, it doesn't even sound right.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine?
Yeah, we're going to play the slower version because I like that one better.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood.
Yeah. I'd never remember that. I do not remember that.
It just sounds completely and utterly foreign, doesn't it?
It does. It's like the staccato on the, and sorry to get choir technical on everybody, but the staccato on the this seems like it's inserted.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it really does.
I'm going to play it back. It seems like where he says, it's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, it sounds like it's inserted, but who knows?
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood.
Sorry. Yeah. It just sounds really weird to me. So that's where Josh got my attention, and go ahead, man.
I was just going to say, this is just another one of those visceral childhood memories that, you know, if you were a kid, you know, anywhere, if you're, you know, anywhere between your mid-20s and your, you know, mid-40s today, you grew up watching Mr. Rogers. And, you know, I listened to that song every Saturday morning. My mom used to sing it to me in bed. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, as I remember it, at least.
Yep.
But there is no evidence of that ever being the lyric, Jake, in any of his episodes on the official Mr. Rogers website in which these lyrics are posted. Evidently, it's always been this neighborhood. And as you note, it's enunciated very clearly to the point where it would be hard to misinterpret it as the neighborhood.
Right.
Now, this is... not to delve into the weird too much on this broadcast, because I know you wanted to hold some of that for later, but it seems that some of these small details about our history or recent history are now altered. And I'm saying this definitively because I truly don't believe that I've misremembered these things.
Have you seen the Cinderella one yet?
I have.
Okay,
Mirror, so Mirror versus Magic.
Yeah, yes. So anybody, this is what we're going to leave you with. A little bit of homework from the We Are Not Cattle crew. Go to YouTube, look up a video of Cinderella with the evil witch.
Snow White,
excuse me. Oh my god, why did I say Cinderella? Anyway, I got my Nazi propaganda mixed up. When you see the Snow White and the Evil Witch, I always remember her saying, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all?" Even in the play that I was in, that's what she said, because I was in Snow White growing up. And if you go watch the Disney movies now, she says, "Magic mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all?" And that really screwed me up today.
And just to make it clear for people, Jake, these aren't things, it's not as if Disney has taken Snow White out of the vault and changed that line.
No, because it's if not, you go watch your VHS, it'll be the exact same thing.
Exactly. It's as if these memories that we all have of these artifacts have changed without our knowledge. And of course, this opens a whole other can of worms as to what that really and truly means.
I got it, Josh. I got it. I know what it is. I know exactly what it is.
There's a vast ocean of shit that you people don't know shit about.
There we go. I think I've got it.
Seems to be the case.
Yeah, it does seem to be the case.
I mean, another one that I want to leave listeners with, because it's another one that we both have in common, and everyone we've asked has in common, the color chartreuse. I vividly remember in elementary school art class having on the wall a color wheel in which chartreuse was a purplish magenta almost color.
Yep.
A pink.
Yep.
Now, you know, if anyone's listening and you either have not heard of chartreuse or you or your memories match ours, just go ahead and do a search for chartreuse the color and see what that color really is. Because it's not pink, as I had assumed. Now, I don't know if that is necessarily a case of misremembering or this Mandela effect, but it seems to be more the latter than the former. And there are all these small archetypes, small artifacts in my mind, as well as yours, Jake, that are not consistent with the reality that we currently exist in, it would seem to me, at least.
And so with that, everyone, we will leave you in this reality frame, whichever one it is in. So, Josh, final comments for the show, and then we're gonna wrap, and hopefully we'll be back this Saturday for a special live broadcast, roundtable style, old school, where it'll be myself, Josh Wiley, Matthew Dalton of the Journalistic Revolution, and Robert Wasman of the Journalistic Revolution. And a late night special. I believe we're going to do it. I haven't got a time nailed down yet, but I think it's going to be, it might even be around midnight. So that'll be interesting because I will be solo mission. So you might hear a different style of delivery that evening. So stay tuned for the details. Check my Twitter, We Are Not Cattle, the number one, for the details. Also check the website, wearenotcattle.net. I will post the link for the live roundtable show in there, so you guys can follow us via jrevradio.com, or you can check us out here at blogtalkradio.com. So, Josh, final comments, man.
Just again, thanks, as always, Jake, for having me on. I hope we didn't lose viewers there at the end with this whole Mandela effect concept. It's just got Jake and myself really kind of on edge over the past couple of days. If you want to follow my work, where I don't write about the Mandela effect, more so about, you know, getting off the grid and combating Agenda 21, the general machinations of the Anglo-American establishment. If you're interested in any of those topics, you can check my work out at statelesshomesteading.com. My articles frequently get syndicated on some other alt-media aggregator sites that are far more popular than my own, places like Activist Post, where I'm now a contributing writer, no longer a guest author, so that's kind of cool. The Sleuth Journal is another one. Zen Gardener, G-A-R-D-N-E-R, for those of you who are interested more in exploring the spiritual aspect of conspiratology. My work is picked up there, as well as a number of other blogs that I just simply don't have the time to list here. But again, statelesshomesteading.com for all of my work. And Jake, it's always a pleasure.
Oh, thanks, man. Well, always a pleasure chatting with you. And that's it for the show, everybody. Remember to follow us at or follow the show at wearenotcattle.net. Follow me on Twitter, We Are Not Cattle, the number one. Check out noagendashow.com if you've never listened to it. Highly recommend it. It's where Josh and I get some of our material. They do a great job of doing the painstaking work of listening to the nonsense of the mainstream media and do a great job of deconstructing the media as well. Not so much of the geopolitical side like we do here from analysis perspective. They do get into a little bit of it, but it's more of how you're being duped and whether it's all a bunch of BS, which 9 times out of 10 it is, especially for the clock kid. And by the way, I just want to let everybody know for the record, you can ask anybody I work with. I called that. I'm like, this is a big PR stunt. They arrested the guy, and he's wearing a damn NASA shirt. Give me a break. So anyway, that's it for the show, everyone. Get a friend. Get informed. Get involved. Remember, gather all the information for yourself. Cogitate on it. Think about it. Discern it for yourself. Formulate your own opinion. And who knows, one day you may be right as well. So thanks again to Josh Wiley of the... I almost said it. of statelesshomesteading.com. Tune in this weekend for myself, Matthew Dalton, Robert Wasman, and Josh Wiley. The reuniting of the journalistic revolution will commence Saturday. So take care, everybody. Peace, love, and liberty.